Welcome to Another Focus Podcast. This is the place where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. I'm your host, Singin' Lisa. I'm so glad you stopped by. COVID-19 vaccines are being administered around the world with the hope that it will bring an end to the coronavirus. My guest today is a hero, a doctor, an infectious disease specialist working on the front line with his staff in the state of Mississippi. He'll discuss the progress that's been made since he's begun administering the vaccine. Made available through the Pfizer and Moderna companies, as well as others that are coming. Let's meet Dr. Jesse Pullen Penico.
I'm the infection doctor along with my partner at the county hospital for Harrison County.
But you've had COVID?
I haven't had the disease. I'm exposed to it every day. And
so you're a hero.
And we're a big hospital, and it's owned by the city, state, and county.
Okay.
And so now there's a lot of counties in Mississippi that cannot handle it, and we're doing most of the inpatient COVID stuff in the southern Mississippi area.
Okay.
Another hospital, Singing River, is doing a fair amount.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get them to a certain point, they ship them over to a long-term acute care hospital across the street from us that we also have to take care of.
Oh.
So we kind of, either in the beginning or in the middle or in the end, become the final arbiters of trying to get these people to heal from their inflammatory pneumonias.
Yes. Well, I'm glad you said that. And we jumped right in, but I did want everyone to know we're speaking with Dr. Jesse Pullen. Is it Penico?
Yeah, precisely.
Okay, Perfect. Great. Well, you are an infectious disease specialist in Gulfport, Mississippi, and we're definitely happy to have you here with us. And you mentioned many things that people have become familiar with people having pneumonia, being in the hospital, having to deal with so many different circumstances to try and heal and get better. Well, we're at the point now, we've all been through a pretty trying year in 2020, to say the least. And so now we're in the part where people are seeing the vaccine roll out. And so that's the big conversation amongst a lot of people around the world, of course. And so my question is, what are your thoughts about it? Because I think one of the biggest myths or concerns is that it came too quickly. And so maybe you could share your thoughts on that, because some people maybe don't understand the process of what it takes to get a vaccine.
Well, this virus has had two other cousins, if not indeed sisters, that have caused epidemics previously. There was the SARS in China, Shanghai, and that was very severe, and that went away after a couple of years, and they were able to try and clamp down and hold it underfoot, but the rules there from the Communist Party in China are more extreme than we would allow to happen in this country, at least so far.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another cousin or sister called MERS, Middle Eastern Respiratory Distress Syndrome. And they started building the vaccine from the MERS outbreak almost a decade ago. And the viruses are so close that they were, with minimal adaptation, able to develop the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine, which were being built for the MERS virus, and simply adapt it to this. So it really, from a certain point of view, had been in the works for 10 years.
Which is what everyone heard is the number that should be the required amount of time before something is approved. So actually, the vaccine is right on time, since it's already been worked on.
Well, they had cataloged it and they had put it away because the MERS virus disappeared.
Okay.
And this is taking longer to happen here with this SARS-2 virus, COVID virus, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully it will go the way that MERS has and disappear. Hopefully with 70% either infection, natural infection, or vaccine acceptance from the population, and then we'll have herd immunity and the damn thing will go away.
Yeah, that would be wonderful news. And what was it that caused MERS in particular to go away? Was it just not as strong?
I don't think it was as strong. We don't know.
Okay.
All right. There's still the question, was this virus weaponized out of that weapons lab in China? Mm-hmm. And without having the scientists who worked with it and tell us what they did, we'll probably never know.
Mm. So that does make a difference, whether it was man-made, as it's been suggested, or did it just begin?
Well, it came out of the bat apparently first, but mm-hmm. then the question is, did they work with it and make some alterations? That remains a question.
Okay, I understand. Well, as we are in the phase of rollouts, the concern has been not enough. There's been millions waiting for the approval. And then when it started to roll out, I've heard that, you know, appointments were canceled because there just wasn't enough at the time that was anticipated. So was that done a little too quickly, or did they get overwhelmed, or what was happening?
Well, we have a very broad spectrum of behavior and acceptance in our country because we have greater freedom than any other country, and that's a great thing. So what happened is in Mississippi has had vaccine laws which are rather rigorous. Mm. And the compliance factor with the pediatric vaccines in Mississippi is over 96%.
Wow.
And so California copied the law, mm-hmm. and they've tried to keep it enforced in California. And there's a lot of people that still believe in that myth that some of these pediatric vaccines cause autism. And mm-hmm. The fellow who made up that lie is facing prosecution. Mm. And I think you should throw the book at him, because there's no telling how many people died or had terrible things because he misled them, mm-hmm. all for the sake of self-aggrandizement. Mm-hmm. And the situation is that here in Mississippi, all the vaccines in the first batch that we were given from the federal government were used. All of them. Mm-hmm. And so the state has had to go around and now start having its National Guard do the dispensing, and they're not able to give out in our Coliseum on the Gulf Coast more than about 460 in a day. Mm-hmm. And we had five centers when the hospital had it and was giving it out. And it's a state hospital, interestingly. Mm-hmm. One center, we were able to give 1,000 vaccines in one dang day. Wow. And we were doing other hundreds, 400s in each of the others. So they see the population sees the necessity and is used to going ahead and following orders and getting the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And I don't, because I think that most of them understand that it's for their own protection and their children's protection.
Yeah.
And they're still in Facebook and other places, this myth being perpetuated,
yes.
that these vaccines can cause autism and other things. In other states, they're having 45% of the people, nearly half, not get the vaccine when it's available to them. So they're having it stockpile up elsewhere. As if they send it to us, we'll
take care of it.
We'll give it to people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that is unfortunate. And of course, the demand, though, is high around the world. So, it's not just that one state is in need. And I think that's the idea. It seems as though, I guess the thought is there enough? And I'm sure that they can obviously produce more, but is there enough so that everyone can, in a reasonable amount of time, be given the injection, the vaccine, if they so desire?
No, the, right now what's out there is Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine. In the next couple of weeks, I've seen evidence that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine should be coming out.
Yes.
It does not appear quite as effective, but as the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines. But it's has an advantage that it's one shot and you're done, instead of having to have two shots a month apart.
That would make it more popular.
Yeah. The AstraZeneca vaccine is out in Europe and England, but that's an English and Swiss company, and so they're probably using up all of their supplies over there, as understandably they should. You know, it's their vaccine. They need to vaccinate as many of their people as they can.
Yes.
And there's a couple of other vaccine manufacturers that should be coming out.
Okay.
And hopefully we'll have enough vaccine in short order to get the fabled hopeful herd immunity.
Yeah, a couple of things. Maybe you could explain again, because we heard that phrase very early on in the year, getting to herd immunity would make a big difference because of the large size, the group factor. What is the advantage of that at this point?
Well, if you have a disease that's a working it through a group of animals, and obviously this was originally started with cattle, and hence the term herd, which is insulting to many of us humans, but
clearly understood.
But the when you get about 70% of that herd of cattle, then if one cow or a bull gets it and wants to pass it on, it can't, because the cattle surrounding it that it congregates with have it or had the vaccine, and it cannot go through, and it cannot, and so it will die out either with the immunologic recovery of that animal or its death. And so the hopefully in that manner, the virus, or if it should happen to be a bacteria, will die out and not to threaten the survival of the herd. And the herd will have been protected, and that's where we got the name herd immunity.
Okay, because of the size, and of course, with everyone, a majority having been vaccinated, then that helps to diminish the effectiveness of it.
Standardly, it's around two-thirds to three-fourths, probably right in between.
Okay. Okay, and then you said a moment ago that you feel that Pfizer and Moderna worked more effectively. What is the difference in the other companies that are coming out, aside from maybe being one shot? What is making it more effective than the others?
The stuff I was reading about the you'll see the Johnson & Johnson stock took a nosedive in the beginning of the week when some of their efficacy data came out. It was about 60-some-odd% effective, whereas the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine for the classic original strain of COVID are 94.5-95% effective. You know, so they're a third more effective.
Yeah.
So and almost 100, but not 100.
Right.
And there's no question that with the people having natural infection and those 95% effective vaccine, you'll get herd immunity.
Yeah.
You'll stop the dang thing in its tracks.
Yes. Well, and then of course, between the 21 days, I believe, for Pfizer and 28, is it for Moderna? What is the effectiveness for that 95% to be reached after having the dosages?
Probably pretty solidly at 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks.
But with each day after the inoculation, you'll have more and more efficacy. There's many people with the Moderna vaccine that have more than half have some effective immunity after the first in vaccination. And the second one is necessary to give a year's worth of protection. So it's not that you don't have a actually probably more after the first shot with the Moderna and the Pfizer percentage of the population protected than is with the Johnson & Johnson shot. But the second shot gives the 1 year's protection rate.
Ah, yes. And then, so we don't know yet if there will be a need to retake the vaccine, like the flu shot.
There's that African strain. We've had two patients in South Carolina come down with it, and it's significantly different. Mm-hmm. So they're thinking they may have to have a slightly altered third shot for mm-hmm. the Moderna vaccine. Okay. And they think right at the moment that the Pfizer vaccine needs no alteration. Mm-hmm. So the problem with the Pfizer vaccine is that very few places have a freezer that'll take it down to a negative 70 degrees centigrade mm-hmm. and be able to store it. So that's its problem is not the efficacy rate, but the ability to store it.
Yes. To do that. Well, I understand that. I thank you for that. And of course, those that are still concerned about side effects being the big factor being that this is a synthetic type of vaccine. Can you explain or share with those that may not understand the difference in their concerns about side effects?
Well, the main side effects are about 7% of the population that gets the first shot will have aches and pains somewhere along the line. But other than that, there's not been a whole lot of anaphylaxis. We had nearly 100% take in our 1,000-plus employees at Memorial Hospital in Gulfport, and mm-hmm. We had no anaphylaxis. We had one girl faint, but she has a history of fainting with every other dang vaccine, and so she fainted, and I think that's more a mental thing than anything else, mm-hmm. Emotional. And with the second shot, however, a large proportion of people got a flu-like illness with aches and pains, low-grade fever, even some chills, including me. All right, so I can speak to that.
Okay,
you may have been told, we're massively. We're rounding on a massive number of patients every day because we got hit pretty hard, and we're taking in patients from 100 miles away at Memorial and from smaller hospitals that can't handle it. And so every day we're rounding on enormous numbers, and I was still able to make it through the rounds that day. Mm-hmm. But after I was done, I couldn't see anybody in the office. I was just done. Mm-hmm. And so I've had some wonderful practitioners and a partner and who are, if you will, heroes, perhaps more so than me. Mm-hmm. And you know, they covered for me that day, and I was able to come back and work the next day. So it really hit about 24 hours after the vaccine, mm-hmm. and it lasted for 24 hours, and then I was okay. My senior practitioner got it on a Friday after seeing my response, so that she'd be off Saturday and Sunday, and she said she lost the weekend. Oh. But it wasn't bad, but she wouldn't have felt well working because we work hard. All of them are working hard because we have just an enormous number of people in the hospital. Yeah. And but beyond that, I haven't seen any reactions more severe than that.
Okay. And so is that just the nature of the vaccine, this particular one, on anyone?
That's a very common response. You see 10% of the people getting the flu shot get that response. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't realize that the aches and pains, the low-grade fever, sometimes chills are not caused by the virus itself, but by the body's immune response to the virus or to the vaccine targets from the virus. Mm-hmm. And so it's frequently the immune response. So hopefully it's suggestive that the immune response was wonderful.
Yes. Well, and then once you have the vaccine, you're not in any, you don't have any concerns about obviously working around other people. So there is not the thought at that point about any contagious issues because you had that.
There is a 5% failure rate.
Okay.
But the response I had would be suggestive that I'm not going to have that failure. that I had such a good immune response that my body's immune system should handle it.
Yes. And for those that are waiting and planning and still deciding on getting the vaccine, is there something they can do now to strengthen their immune system, which might allow a better response if they are concerned?
Well, there's a sensible diet, vitamins, getting protein and greens in their diet, just the way their mother would have told them, and that should be it. Don't drink any alcohol. Alcohol actually suppresses the immune system in 8 different spots.
Wow!
And so that's one of the things. Throughout this episode, I'm not averse to alcohol, but I've been teetotaling, knowing that that fact, or factoid.
And is there an amount of time? I know people that are pregnant, sometimes they are withholding certain foods and alcohol because of the pregnancy. So is there a certain time? Is there a certain time that they should refrain? Not just those that are pregnant, but in terms of withholding that for the vaccine purpose.
Well, there are some suggestions of, that there may be some issues with pregnancy. I'm not an expert on that, and I'm looking into that right now. So it certainly will be safe at the conclusion of pregnancy, a day or two after the delivery, because everybody needs to be protected, including the baby.
Yes.
So, because the mother goes through an awful lot. My wife has had 4 children. And I like to tease her and say I had something to do with it. The truth is I had very little.
You were the cause.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, of course, there are those. And so you say your numbers are very, you're very active over there and very always busy, of course, taking care of patients. What's been the effect of children in your area, in your state?
There are occasional children that are affected, but the children's immune systems after the age of 15 months are tremendous and better able to handle the virus than people of greater maturity and being, say, perhaps as a 20-year-old would think of me as being decrepit. The immune systems do start to wilt a bit, if you will, at around the age of 70. Mm. And so that's why the elderly do so badly overall with the infection. There's been a decline in part of the immune system. They call it the immune suppression of senescence, although you don't have to be with Alzheimer's. It's just the senescence refers to aging.
Yes. Well, and of course, that explains very well why they were the first group to receive the vaccine as it was rolled out. And have they divided the groups fairly or in that proper order?
The elderly and the first responders. And then once those, everybody who's willing to take the vaccine has had it, then you start giving it to the other people. The school teachers are certainly at risk. I do believe the kids get it and are relatively asymptomatic and bring it home to mom and dad and grandma. And I've seen a lot of elderly people, I believe, get the infection from the kids. Mm-hmm. And I have no doubt of that, frankly. And so the school teachers are fearful of that. But most of the school teachers are young enough that they'll handle it very well as well. Mm-hmm. And but some of them may have immune problems be at risk.
Today's episode is sponsored by the Akula Foundation and Canon Hospice. The vision and mission of the Akula Foundation envisions recovery from grief and loss through innovative programs for the community, providing compassion, professional support, continuing education, remembrance therapy, chronic illness, and palliative care services. Check out the Akula Foundation on Facebook at www.facebook.com/AkulaFoundation and on their website at akulafoundation.com. Now let's get back to this discussion of the COVID-19 vaccine. Well, as we look at this, and I do, everything you've said has been positive and given a lot of people hope to understand that it is something that can benefit them and that they should take it. Is there anyone that should avoid at all for any reason not taking the vaccine?
Well, the people who have strong histories of anaphylaxis with almost everything, and there are a few of those like that, those are the ones that are at risk. This is even some of those might be able to get away with it. Nobody should get the vaccine unless there's some medical personnel handy with an epinephrine injection ready to be given should they have that response, which in the thousands upon thousands of people that we've given it to, we haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know it can happen. It mm-hmm. happened like the first day in England. Mm-hmm. But so far in the thousands upon thousands of that we've done in Mississippi, we haven't seen one.
That's good. Well, just another reason that someone can be positive, especially if they know their specific history, which would allow them to work with their doctor to make sure that they get the best care in receiving it.
There's also one other thing I'd like to put forth to you, mm-hmm. and that's a treatment that we have seen, and we've collated the data, and we're in the process of writing the paper right now. Hopefully we can get it out next week. Mm-hmm. The medical student and the nurse practitioner, study nurse, are a little daunted by it, but I think if we work hard, we might be, and split it up, everybody in the group might be able to go ahead. We've given the monoclonal antibodies. Mm. Early on to over 600 patients, and historically people who are at great risk have a history of going in being need to be hospitalized 9% of the time. All right, of the 600 that we've done, which is I think not a small number, mm-hmm. Our hospitalization rate is a little more than 3%, so we're able to cut down on hospitalizations with early monoclonal antibody administration by more than 100%.
Right? Wow.
The monoclonal antibodies were looked at in being given late mm-hmm. in the disease process, and then it doesn't work.
Okay.
And that's because the virus really hits in two main stages. One is the early viremic stage, and that's when it's as it builds up, it's releasing more interleukin-6, interleukin-2, which cause a lot of inflammation in the lung. And so then what you're fighting is a post-inflammatory lung disease, no longer a viral disease. Mm-hmm. So the monoclonal antibody will work during the viremic phase, but once you're past that, all right, and into the post-viremic inflammatory stage in the lung, it's too damn late.
Mm-hmm.
So the secret is somebody gets sick first day, two, up to about day 7, 8, mm-hmm. I think up to 10, mm-hmm. they need to present to the place that's doing the monoclonal antibodies and get protected.
Okay. And so they would be aware of that by having symptoms. So it would be symptoms that would cause them to first obviously be concerned.
Right.
Okay.
So far we haven't seen anybody be asymptomatic and then develop the post-inflammatory lung disease.
Yes. Well, have you found through the year, well, let me jump back now that we've discussed where we are today. What was your reaction and maybe some of the first things you did when you realized that COVID was coming our way and this was something you were going to have to deal with?
Well, we started right away trying to do everything that we could. We were giving ivermectin back in March to our first patients. We were never really impressed that the ivermectin and an antiparasitic really works that well. Mm-hmm. Other people do it, and it's become back in vogue in some centers. The FDA first said it doesn't work. Now they're taking a position where they say, well, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't had a lot of great guidance from the mm-hmm. FDA, I don't
yeah.
think. Mm-hmm. The hydroxychloroquine issue remains an issue in India. They believe in it. They work, and India's population is, what, 4 times ours?
Yes.
And so so they're using the hydroxychloroquine, mm-hmm. and I think it became a political football. And so we'll never have the straight answer in this country because it became a political football. And mm-hmm. I think that those people who threw it back and forth did a disservice to the population. And it should have been worked out very well without interference about whether it did or did not work. Mm-hmm. And so I think that India says it does. Our groups say it doesn't, but then there's a lot of politics involved, and it's just it remains a question mark to me. Mm-hmm. Right? So to be honest, so
are you a fan of the remdesivir?
The study I referred to with the monoclonal antibody being given late was in conjunction with the remdesivir.
Okay.
And it didn't work. And we did a study earlier on. We did about 11 patients that we gave the remdesivir early on. It was a study that we were engaged in early treatment. I think it worked. Mm-hmm. So, we need a lot more patients. My partner and my practitioners in our group, we have 6 practitioners in our group. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of people seeing a lot of patients.
Believe in the monoclonal
antibody more than the remdesivir. Mm-hmm. And the remdesivir is 3 different days of infusions, whereas the monoclonal antibody is 1 infusion, real quick, can be given about an hour and a half to 3 hours, and get the patient on the road again and get back to their business.
Now, is that in line with the plasma benefits when people are, I think you're giving plasma after someone has been infected?
Yeah, the plasma is only indicated once the PO2 is starting to fall. Okay. Now, obviously, that's on the cusp of where it may be getting to post-viral to acute. Now, in the studies and in the first couple patients we saw, 1 unit of plasma wasn't enough to do anything because it's only 200 milliliters or 200 cubic centimeters of other people's plasma, and it doesn't contain as much pure antibody in it as the monoclonal antibody infusion would have. We started doing 2 units, and I think we see a week improvement in what we're seeing. So the people at Tulane don't believe in the plasma. But they've only been giving 1 unit. And when you give 2, obviously it's twice as much. It's 400 cc's. It's getting to be about as much as a full unit of blood. And so that's starting to get to a point where a volume that might make a difference.
Yes, I understand. Well, that is promising and hopefully will benefit someone if they're right there at the right time to be able to take advantage of it. So, well, as you approach all of this busyness that you have every day and giving injections now, is that the primary part of your day, or is it still squeezing in the regular patients and all of the other things that you do?
Well, we still have a lot of patients with various and sundry other diseases, the atypical mycobacterial lung diseases, the AIDS, bone infections, heart infections, postoperative infections. We still have to take care of those as well. So one Thursday, I think I worked 18 hours, and we had 71 patients in the hospital, and about half of them were COVID, and half of them were not.
Wow.
So just half of that is a full day.
My goodness.
And if I didn't have wonderful practitioners and a partner, we couldn't have made it.
Yeah, absolutely. I understand. I mean, it's overwhelming, especially early on when people were not allowed to even stay at the hospital, which was disappointing for them, but understandably because of the need of and the severity of some of the people that were there who needed that more emergency care.
Yes.
And so it's just been a learning process for all of us throughout this year and even now. So as you are awaiting more vaccine, you're still seeing new COVID cases?
Unfortunately, it's not. We were beginning of last week, we had 33 COVID patients in the hospital. Beginning of this week, it was down to 23. But we have a whole lot of numbers picking up again because we're starting to take in more from as far north as the Delta.
Wow.
We're talking about over 100 miles from Gulfport going up into the middle of Mississippi, halfway to Tennessee. And it's we're really being a center, and a lot of the other hospitals up there say that they're overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And we've doubled our ICU beds. We've tripled a step down unit, all right, where patients perhaps now stable on post tracheostomy care with T pieces can be kept and taken care of. We've really converted much of the hospital to intense care, and so we're able to handle it. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the emergency is over and the need for all these ICU beds is no longer there.
Yeah,
that'll be another interesting time.
Well, you've converted a lot. Was your setup a lot smaller or dedicated to obviously differently?
We actually had two ICUs. We had one on the second floor that did neurosurgery and post-cardiac care, about 15 to 20 beds. And we had one up on the fifth floor, same number. Wow. So we've more than doubled that now. And
yes.
I hope vehemently that we'll get back to the need of only about 15 in each unit. And hopefully within the year.
Well, did you ever think that you would be living in a time where this, the magnitude of what we've seen has happened?
Yeah, this is kind of my second pandemic. First mm-hmm. one was with the AIDS epidemic. Began as I started my fellowship in 82, kind of actually had to start early in December of 81. Mm-hmm. And that's when the first AIDS patients were being seen. And there was a huge panic. You couldn't get the janitorial personnel to empty the garbage cans. You couldn't get the dietary personnel to bring in the trays to the patients. So the medical students, the residents, the fellows had to become janitors and nurses as well to take care of those patients. So this is kind of my second go around, although the numbers aren't as great. Mm-hmm. They're still huge, and it was still a huge public panic back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're very correct in that, because I think because of the years that have gone by, we've probably forgotten about it because things have gotten under control and been maintained to a certain level. You've had that, and I think even for us, well, Katrina is the comparison that many make to what this feels like in a lot of ways because of the uncertainty, just the unknown, and all of the rebuilding, you know, really.
Well, I was in Metairie for Katrina. I slept on the a year after Katrina is when I moved, but mm-hmm. I've been in New Orleans for 31 years, and I slept on the floor at East Jefferson Hospital for 3 months with the flood of Katrina. So I'm very familiar with Katrina, too. So it's one of the reasons why I've tried to keep doing this, because there aren't very many people who've been through as many disasters as I have. And so.
Yes. Well, I would
it could help.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're helping, and with the years and the experience, and just being, you know, people don't like to be called hero, but it takes someone with courage to step forward and do it, even when all of the answers aren't there. But when you know that there is a need for people who need help and who need someone that can give them some reassurance. And so have you had moments where you've seen your staff just rise above and beyond what you ever thought they may have been expected to do?
Lately, and my staff every day. I mean, I thought that the people at East Jefferson remained the main hospital to take in patients post-Katrina. Were heroes back then, and I think that the people in this hospital and probably most of the hospitals really taking in these patients are just as heroic now. And every day now, it's like that because they know they're at risk. I've had my nurse came down with COVID, and she's back at it, and she feels that she's covered in Teflon now that she's had it. And it will bounce off of her, and she's a marvel.
That's
and we just had a great crew of people believe as I do. This is why we're here.
Yes. Well, there are not enough words, you know, for anyone to say thank you to all of the people on the front line doing what you do, because, you know, I would say at this point it's a passion in your life that you are taking care of people and making sure people get to go home and be with loved ones again. What is your optimism, you know, for our future as we are where we are?
It all depends upon vaccine release, and when we can get 70% of the population vaccinated or recovered from the infection itself, I think that we'll see the end of this dang thing. At least I certainly hope so. Yeah. And I'm hoping maybe summer.
That's great. And then should we be concerned with mutation as we're hearing more about that heading, I guess, in our direction in some cases?
There have been that's what I was talking about with the African variety, or there was a mutation with that. This other mutation that they've had in England causing more rapid spread, it is still susceptible to the targets of the vaccines that are available. Okay. So that mutation did not protect the virus from the immune system. However, the African has some protection, but not complete, from the Moderna vaccine, but the Moderna vaccine still has activity against it. And the Pfizer vaccine, they feel, doesn't have any problems with it. There's the AstraZeneca, perhaps, we don't know, and the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, I remain concerned about with the African strain.
Mm. Well, that remains to be seen, but we're going to remain hopeful that everyone steps up and does what needs to be done so that we can all be safe. And so, again, we appreciate all that you are doing, you and your team, because we know nurses are right up at the top, nurse practitioners, everyone really all on the front line equally providing care for everyone. And so what keeps you motivated? What keeps you grounded when you need to escape, maybe?
I have a great kids, grandkids, and a wife, and it's to some extent for them that we keep doing this. And of course, they're scared sometimes when I come home. So first thing they do is they toss me to the showers, and they're a little less afraid now that I've had both shots of the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I'm also covered with Teflon like my nurse. And that, of course, remains to be seen. But my immune response to that second dose was so severe, I'm pretty confident I'm going to do fine.
Well, that is good. Yeah, that's good news for them and everyone around and involved. And so, again, you know, hopefully we'll be able to follow up and get an update and talk about the good outcome that has happened with everyone being involved. But again, we want to say thank you, Dr. Jesse Pullen-Pinico.
Yes, ma'am.
And for all that you do and taking care of Mississippi. So we appreciate you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. I'm Singing Lisa. Thanks for listening to The Focus Podcast, where we inspire, motivate, empower, and impact. Be sure and check out the show notes in the description on how to learn more about my guest today and connect with them. Also, subscribe and leave a comment. You can listen to The Focus Podcast on your favorite platforms, including Spotify, Google Podcast, iHeart, iTunes, and Radio Public. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, stay focused.